Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. This week's guest is one of my favorite persons in the world. Her name is Gina Nemo, and she's an award-winning producer, director, writer, actress, and is the founder of Ventura Actor Studio and Gina Nemo Studios. She's producing and directing films, television shows, pilots, and documentaries through her production and marketing company, G Plan Media and Entertainment. Currently, all of her films have won awards all over the world. Welcome, my friend. It's nice to have you on.
Oh, hi. Hi, Brian. It's nice being here.
Oh, good. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule because you are doing a ton of stuff.
Yeah, amazing stuff, actually. I'm a woman of action.
No, yes, you are. I follow you on social media and we chat from time to time. I mean, you're acting, directing. You have a school, an acting school. You have
I've also just launched the film school as well.
You've launched a film school. I mean, I know there's a couple things that I'm missing, but we'll dig in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So how do you accomplish so much and keep it moving and flowing, kind of without wanting to jump off a bridge?
You know, it's funny. A lot of people always ask me how I do so much and if I ever take any downtime. The funny thing is I'm really good with time management and I do take a lot of downtime. I live in a beautiful place, so I often go out in nature and sometimes I just sit and read and, you know, people just don't understand how I accomplish so much and they think that I'm just like not sleeping and I'm doing it 24/7, but I do have a great life with my kids and, you know, I have a regular home life. I live outside of Los Angeles and I did that on purpose about 20 years ago so I can have peace of mind and not have to live it 24/7. So I am fantastic at time management. And I have this fun thing that I always say, I kind of have filing folders in my head and I just hit one at a time.
It's so obvious, but it's really important because it's when you do a lot of things, and I've been guilty of that in my life for sure. Mm-hmm. They kind of seep out amongst each other and it's hard to almost do anything.
Yeah. I'm very good with, taking a task and finishing it before I move on to something else. Mm-hmm. I have to say that's the secret to success. Obviously that took many years of trial and error. But I have it. I'm acing it now because, as you can see, all the things I'm doing.
Yeah.
So. Well, I can't fake that.
No, and I would. I'm going to take a guess here that you're also surrounding yourself with good, like-minded people.
I pretty much steer my ship alone. But if there's anyone around or surrounding me with any sort of negative energy, I definitely clear. I steer clear away from that.
Yeah.
And a lot of my students, which I know we'll talk about at my acting school, they also know that. And the energy is always great in the room. And, if there's any problem people at all, I usually ask them to leave. I'm very clear about being in a creative space and nurturing and helping people, but making sure that everyone is in the same energy and giving the same and kind and loving and supportive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so important, especially in something like acting where you're really kind of haven't let your guard down and just be vulnerable.
Yeah. I provide a very safe space for all of the actors. And, I get a lot of new actors all the way to professional actors are coming to the school now. More people from LA are coming, even though I'm outside of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. They're seeking what I give, because a lot of classes, they just treat everybody as cattle and they don't really treat each actor as an individual. Yes. And, you know, they really, really want that because they want to get better. They want to better their game. They want to work in this industry. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of these places, they don't teach you how.
Yeah, you know, I've taken my share of classes through the years, and you're right. I mean, some people just, it's almost like, I don't know, it's hard to explain where it's coming from and their need to kind of almost bully their students, but it's no, how can you thrive in something where you're getting berated? You know, I mean,
I've heard a lot of the stories, believe me. One woman in particular came to my class. She told me about what some people did to her in some previous classes. And I just sat there with my mouth open, like,
yeah,
what's the point?
Yeah. Well, I've been into some of your classes, and in knowing you and knowing what you're doing, and it just, it feels like a family.
Yeah. And my school's definitely a family. It's definitely growing though. Now I've got more than one family, but you know, hopefully we're moving to a bigger space this next year, and hopefully I'll bring some more amazing teachers in so I can start focusing on other things as well. You know, That's awesome. Just kind of stay with the main, a lot of my professional actors. I do need to work with the beginners because I'm the one that actually, I have my own method, believe it or not. And I know how to accelerate them to a place where they feel like they're making progress in every lesson. And that's a skill in its own. I don't think I could teach someone that. That's just more of an intuitive skill. I know how to psychologically get them to zone in. So I would definitely do the beginners and my pros, but for all the other people who are coming in now, you know, it just depends really.
When did you develop that when you were acting? You know, I mean, you've been in the entertainment business for most of your life, and
I think a little bit of everything.
I mean, acting, modeling, singing, you name it.
Well, I took classes, you know, I took from some of the greatest teachers in LA back in the day. You know, I had scene partners like Sean Penn, Nicolas Cage, Jack Nicholson. I mean, these were my scene partners. You know, wow. Johnny Depp was actually in my class and I didn't realize it until after we were on Jump Street together. And I was like, oh, wow, because he was so quiet. I just didn't really, you know, I didn't really notice. And at that time, he wasn't who he was at that time. He was just another actor in the room. And I think we even did some scenes together, but, you know, years later when we were on Jump Street, we were laughing about it. But, you know, that teacher worked with Lee Strasberg in New York, and her name was Peggy Fury, the late, great Peggy Fury. And, you know, I also worked with Janet Lahonte, with Josh Brolin was my partner there. And, you know, I have been in this industry my whole life, and also, you know, worked in television and, you know, got really close to bigger things. I had huge agents at one point.
You were doing really high profile videos, music videos, right when MTV was kind of, you know, at its apex.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing everything. I have to say, you know, part of me feels like I was ahead of my time in a lot of ways. And I feel like it's all kind of coming to fruition now. I feel my father used to say a funny thing. My late father, you know, he was a jazz composer. Actually, he has a lot of hits. I still deal with that too, music. But you know, he used to say, oh, you're on your launching pad. And I kind of feel like I really am where I need to be right now. I've never felt so certain in my whole entire life that I am doing what I am supposed to be doing. And that's an amazing feeling.
Yes, it is.
To wake up every day and know I have this purpose and I'm changing people's lives. And I'm also doing everything I love. I mean, I don't think you can beat that feeling.
No, you can't. It really, it just, there is no better feeling of just kind of having, just knowing your purpose.
Yeah, I definitely know my purpose. I always knew as a child that I could change people's lives, even when I was younger, because I learned a lot about watching people when I was a child, and I was around a lot of amazing creative people because my father was in the music industry. So he did have a lot of actors at the house, like Telly Savalas, and a bunch of people would come and visit him who were fans of his music and everything. So I got to see an overall amazing, you know, kind of like looking in a fish tank and going, wow, okay. You know, loads of creative geniuses like Frank Sinatra, all those people. And you'd be like, oh, wow, I guess these guys are famous. And And then you realize how creative they are. And I think that's what it comes down to. You know, you can't really be something unless you're living it. And a lot of people who are successful that I've met in this industry, they work very hard and, you know, they live it every day. Some people are better at finding, you know, downtime than others. I mean, I did find it difficult when I lived in Los Angeles. It was harder for me to slow down and kind of check out. It seemed to go more, you know, texting all day, everything just, especially when I was working with some big studios, it would just get too much, you know? So I am a big, huge, I guess I'm a huge believer that you need to go someplace that's more quiet in order to be creative.
I couldn't agree with you more. And when I'm going back to LA here very shortly, and I'm going to be living, you know, a good 20, 30 miles out of town. And yes. I have to have quiet. I have to, you know, just that serenity and such, just to kind of be able to stay grounded and feel creative and tap into it.
I've had friends, you know, who I grew up in the industry, you know, they're very known, produce a lot of big shows and everything. Mm-hmm. And they're always like, you'll be back. And I'm like, well, it's been almost 20 years. I haven't come back yet. And they're like, well, you will once everything keeps blowing up. And I'm like, no, I'm going to have my own studio right here.
Damn straight.
I won't have to go anywhere when I finish.
Hey, you are the creator of your own universe.
Exactly.
What prompted your interest to get involved? Just being around all those people, you know, your dad's name is Henry, right?
Yeah, his name is Henry Nemo. He wrote a lot of jazz hits in the 40s. And I've recorded a lot of his hits. I also did a tribute album with Billy Vera to my father a few years ago. Billy Vera is pretty known. He wrote that hit called At This Moment and that Michael Bublé also sang. And he's one of the old timers that's still around. So we went in and did a little tribute album to my father. And he was a real character, you know, a real entertainer. I've seen some videos.
I mean, he was kind of like a bebop guy, right?
Yeah, well, he was just a character. I mean, he's one of those characters that, I mean, you've seen that, you know, the Starkist tuna was modeled after my father. I mean, that's funny, you know, because my dad created Jive Talk. So, you know, when the guy's got the glasses and the cap, the Starfist tuna, they actually follow me on Instagram now, which is funny, you know. The artist actually modeled it after my father. My father didn't even speak regular English. He was a jive man. You know, it was funny. You know, I often think of how I would make a movie about him one day, you know, and I'm like, who the heck is going to play him? You know, that's going to be my biggest issue. Cause you know, he'd go, hey, slapping on Fifth Avenue, baby. You know, I'd be like, okay, dad, I'll see you later. You know?
Oh, so, wow. That's very interesting. What about, I wonder if Josh Gad could pull that off?
I don't know. He was a real hipster, though. He was ahead of his time. Yeah. Oh, my God. He had so many people loved him and adored him. Mm. He was awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Since we're talking about acting briefly, what's some advice that you would give to other first of all, to actors starting out in the business, and then also secondly, to actors that are currently in the business?
Well, you know, I say the same thing to everyone, no matter where they're at. I always say, how bad do you want it? You know, that's the first question I always ask everyone, because it's funny because, you know, a lot of places, they just want the money. They want to tie you down.
The fame.
And they just want to make you click over, you know, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And I'm like this, if you're not really serious and passionate about this, do me a favor, do yourself a favor, and do something that you are passionate about. Because the actors that I find that succeed, even beginners that I have actually started out who are flying right now, they are very passionate, very driven. All they want to do is act. All they want to do is get in films and TV. And they're working at it every single day. And I tell them how long it'll take before I can get them to a good place to audition. And if they are excited, which I get a lot of people coming in that are excited, I go, you know what? Anyone can do this now. With all of the digital casting and everything, the world's your oyster. I mean, this is an amazing time to be an actor. If you really want it, I mean, look at how much is going on and
so
all the
much
streaming.
Content that is needed out there with all
oh my God,
the
I shot
services.
How many films last year? I'm shooting three more next year. I'm kind of like, and I launched the film school. We just shot a huge feature. I just think that this is a great time. Mm-hmm. If you want to do this, this is an amazing time to do it.
Yes. And there's a lot of people who created their own project for themselves, and they were made into big shows like The OA, and I think what is that, Issa Rae, what did she do on YouTube, you know, just a lot of stuff like that.
If you've got something that's getting attention, they'll find you.
Yeah, there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, I want to stay in the indie world. I do not want to deal with studios, so I will be kind of doing my own thing probably for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I have no interest after working with big studios and networks, and I had a huge advertising agency at one time when I worked with Sony. We did the Avatar trailer, everything, the original Avatar trailer. I have no interest in big budget stress type stuff. I kind of want to go the route that Tarantino went, Tyler Perry, you know, the independents that make things, and then people want to invest, that's fine, you know, for the bigger picture. But I want
to
keep control of my vision. I am not giving it away.
Yeah. Yeah. So that doesn't mean you don't want it to show up on the big screen or on Netflix or whatever.
It will.
It's
no,
just
all
you
stuff
want to be in charge.
Yeah. I want to be in charge because I've seen how things get ruined when, you know, people try to tell you what they should do or they're in a position to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't really, and I've heard stories of very talented directors when they didn't get their final cut and how it ruined their career. So I just want to retain all my vision. Yeah, as far as big screen, find distributors and all that. Yeah, that's great. I don't mind doing, I already just, one of my first documentaries that I made just got worldwide distribution. So
what's the name of it for our listeners?
Yeah, it's called Voices, and it was my first documentary I made about struggling poets, poets who had gone through really dark stuff and kind of, you know, found light in poetry. And it's not for the lighthearted. It's very, very dark. I mean, we have, you know, molestation, drugs, and they talk about their struggles and, you know, why they're a poet and why they're doing it. And then we actually have them perform their poetry. Mm-hmm. I'm in there also. And you know, it's more of just like, I wanted to show that people can heal through the written word. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, most of the things I make always have some sort of purpose. They always have some sort of statement. And even in my quirky, dark comedies, there's going to be a joke or something in there that's going to tell you everything about my sense of humor.
Well, I mean, that's awesome. And I mean, I'm the same way. I really, you know, whenever I put something out there, I kind of want it to touch people in a certain way and make them think. And hopefully that thinking gets them to change in a more positive way going forward, right?
Yeah, I remember when I mentioned the poetry documentary to someone very famous, I won't say who it is, and he said, why did you make a poetry documentary? You know it's not going to make any money. And I said, well, and he did stuff with Ed Harris and everything. And I said, well, I didn't really do it for the money. I wanted to, you know, kind of make a statement and show that people can heal through writing and poetry. And that was my main goal, you know, but that was the first thing he said, like, that's like, you know, a choice that would never make any money, you know? So
no, I understand it. And it's just something we need to do and you need to do.
Yes.
And I get it. And it'll reach people, you know, and a lot of people, unfortunately, I think just think it's got to hit this huge thing, but you know, it's,
I don't care about that. You know, it was already out in 2016 and was picked up by a big distributor. And then they had some issues with some of their distribution channels. And then I guess it got taken off of Amazon. Now it's in a bunch of places. Now they just did a special project worldwide release on it. And so more people have seen it. So, you know, I always just tell people to type in Gina Nemo Voices. And I know it's on Vimeo, Amazon. It's on loads of stuff now. But like I said, that was my first one I did as far as a documentary. And it's a bit dark and a bit serious, but I've gotten good feedback from it. So that's fine. And as long as it touched someone, that's, you know, that's amazing. Yeah. So,
well, and it obviously touched all the people that you included.
Yes. Yes. You know, it did make a big difference for some of them. It did make a huge difference for some of them.
Where do you get your inspiration for kind of all that you're doing now? I mean, has your inspiration, let me ask you this, changed throughout your career in the entertainment business? Does that make sense?
I think why? That when I was younger, I always wanted to do something to help others. So as I got older and I got more power in, or, you know, I was able to do more. And I, you know, got more skills and all the things that I have built. It was easier for me to do what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So because of all the different skills I have, I haven't really changed as far as what inspires me. Mm-hmm. But the difference is now I can make it all happen because I have done so much in many, many different. I often say to people, I have about 20 careers. If you really want to know, you have to sit down for an hour.
I know you do.
And, you know, I've always had the same vision, you know, I do photography and everything. I always have vision of, you know, what I want to see. It's just the difference is now I can take all of my skills and put it into like all of my projects. So that's what's made me really happy. Mm-hmm. I think that's the difference. But, you know, I always get inspired, you know, it could be something really simple. You know, something simple can inspire me and I just get this idea and my head just runs with it. And that's how I make movies, really. I mean, this new movie of mine that is winning, and honestly, it hasn't lost one festival, and it's called Shadow Farm. And I wrote it to make a statement because, you know, if I wasn't in the entertainment industry, you know what I think I would be doing?
What?
I would have had an organization that protects elderly people from fraud because I see all of these older people who don't understand and they get scammed and they lose their life savings. And that so upsets me. I really don't like that. So I kind of put that a bit into Shadow Farm because I had seen, you know, articles about all these people who got scammed. And, so I thought, well, I can kind of make people aware of it through filmmaking. And even if it shows at a huge festival and a lot of people go, oh, wow.
Right.
It might make them think, or it might make them protect themselves. Yeah, but it hasn't lost one festival yet. It's placed or won. And I'm waiting to see what it's going to do in the bigger ones through next year. So, and I challenged myself. I shot it in one 16-hour day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's pretty powerful. I'm very, very happy with it for, you know, putting it all together in that short a time.
Now it's a short.
It's a short and I wrote it and I produced it and I directed it and I casted it. And I always do wardrobe and everything because I have a certain look I want and that's it. That's just how I am. So.
Do you want to make it into a feature?
Oh, it would be an amazing feature. Yes, I would love to do that, but it really just depends on what, you know, gets lined up. Now that we're going to do, I want to do the feature of Dust Slicker, which was my big award-winning film. That's the one I'm really looking forward to shooting in the summer. Mm-hmm. And we're also launching the film school. We just did our first feature and we let some of the film school on set. That was challenging because we had some well-known people in the movie, but I think overall we prevailed, and I also have another known director working with me on the film school. So we figured out what we need to do next time when you bring a lot of new people into the fold.
Okay.
So
are you talking about Crush It when you filmed Crush It recently?
Yeah. When we filmed Crush It and we had Tom Hanks' brother, Jimmy Hanks there, and we had other known people in the film. And I'm also a lead in it, which I did not originally plan for. And I had to, you know, since I don't
drink. That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And since I don't drink and it takes place on vineyards and I'm supposed to be like this wine, you know, special, you know, connoisseur and, right. You know, I love my wines. And so I had to talk to an old friend from high school who is really big in Northern California. And he kind of, I said to him, I said, listen, I don't really have a lot of positive things to say about drinking because all I've seen, you know, in Hollywood is negative. So, and since I don't drink, I mean, how can I, can you just help me like love wine? Because
Did you use really grape juice? What did you use something like that? As
well, no. The director, I did bring the director in to do it. He wanted all real wine. So we had real wine bottles. But the thing was, is that I would just sip it and then kind of spit it out. You know, I don't have a drinking issue. It's not like I'm in AA. I just don't like it.
Sure.
You know, I'm not a big, I don't really need anything. So I'm, you know, I wake up happy without having to take a pill or anything.
Yeah, kind of the same way,
So, you know, I'm just saying that I just had to kind of find a way to love something that I don't normally do. Because, you know, I know a lot of people who are just love wine and they'll talk about it for an hour, you know.
Right.
And I was like, and you know how he helped me is he said, well, you love, you know, you love to hear about food and how things are being made. Well, just think of wine as food, you know, like a white wine has these fruits in it and a red wine has this. And it kind of helped me look at it in a different way. And it really helped actually for the character.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So when did you start writing screenplays and pilots? Is that, well, you've been doing that for a long time or is that just more recently with all the other stuff that you've been kind of adding onto your plate?
Well, I actually, believe it or not, I started writing probably in the 90s, but I just never did anything with it. It was like I would write a script and I'd send it to a couple friends and they'd say, well, that's cool. And then it would just stop there. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'd have to say the 90s, it was, you know, like mid 90s. And I just never did anything with it. Then I wrote one weekend, I wrote a whole script about like my childhood and all this stuff. And then one of the computers crashed and I lost that. And I was like, huh, you know, and I always had strange, you know, when I look back at one of my first scripts, it's a very strange story. I've always had these kind of, I like things that are a little bit more, you know, visually kind of, they kind of lock you in your head a bit. So like to give you an example, I love certain filmmakers, you know, who are into kind of shocking people a little bit. I love that. It does, but I'm not really into heavy violence. So I have to find my own way of, you know, the quirkiness. I'm not, you know, I'm not into heavy blood and you know, all that stuff, but I do like dark stuff and I do like, you know, being silly, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Well, I was going to ask you, is there any current writers out there from, you know, a particular movie or a series or something that you kind of, you know, could model yourself after a little bit or gain inspiration from?
It's hard because I have so many you know, my taste is in so many different genres.
Sure.
You know, I love sci-fi. I love dark comedy. You know, I love murder mysteries. Mm-hmm. I'd have to say filmmakers. I mean, there's part of Tarantino I really like, you know, mm-hmm. I like that he has his own vision, you know, without the violent part.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's a great writer.
Like, yeah. I can relate to a lot of his sense of humor, you know, even though his might go a little bit more extreme than mine, but I can relate to that. So I think he grew up in LA also. So, you know, you kind of grew up during a time where you kind of pick up a lot of those cues.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time I feel like there's stuff that's familiar to me. But I also love other filmmakers like Wes Anderson and people
He's
who,
my
you know,
favorite.
Yeah. I mean, I like all
God.
Of that.
It's quirky city and it's just so awesome.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of kind of quirky and different and, you know, just, and that, oh my God, I saw Dune. I know a lot of people want to down it and everything because it's big budget and all these things, but man, I thought it was amazing. I went to IMAX, I sat there and I thought the director did a fantastic job.
I haven't seen it yet.
I actually lost my breath during part of it. Some of the visuals, I was like, wow, you know, it was great.
I look forward to seeing that. And I've not seen The French Dispatch either yet.
Well, I haven't either. That's one of the things on my list I want to watch. So that's the next one I'm going to watch. But I've often, even in my master class, I've often had my students watch movies and then we would talk about them. And Wes Anderson is someone I've brought in there.
Oh, Grand Budapest Hotel is one of my top 10 favorite films.
It's fantastic. I tend to kind of go towards the filmmakers more than the actual written material, because I'm also a photographer and a director. And I think I look more at things visually. I learned that a long time ago. Some people learn more by reading and some people learn more by visual contact, or, you know, any type of visuals. And I tend to go for visuals. So if I see something that I go, holy, that's amazing, that will inspire me. Mm. You know, I might never want to make a movie like Dune, because to me, that's big budget stuff that I don't want to be responsible for.
A lot of pre-production on that sucker.
That's like losing your life for 3 years. Oh, no, thank you.
Seriously, I can only imagine, but, right?
Yeah, but I'll be the first person to say it was absolutely shot, you know, wonderfully. And I will go to big budget stuff with my kids, you know, Marvel stuff, and it's fun to watch. And yeah, but I don't want to be behind any of those.
No.
And also, you know, also I do like real stories. You know, I loved Knives Out. I got a real kick out of that movie. That was my sense of humor too. I thought that was really great.
Agreed.
Great movie. I love just kind of this, a little bit of the silly, quirky, you know, little dark.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure where I'm going to end up completely, but I'm excited about just doing what I want to do. So,
any advice for, you know, script writers, screenwriters? I mean, do you just kind of, inspired by something and then, you know, just.
I know a lot of writers because I'm part of a lot of international groups. And I also know a lot of successful screenwriters who have gotten into the union and so on. One particular successful writer, he just had a movie optioned and we were going to work together. And then he got into the Writers Guild and then his price went up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, once I get more of a budget, then we'll work together. And I had seen a short film of his that he had shot in Mexico. It was amazing. And, you know, he inspired me in a way because he took something that was just so simple and he made it so powerful. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with his script, but he's kind of doing the shuffle now. I guess I would tell people, because I know a lot of screenwriters out there, they get really, really discouraged because I see it all the time on social media. They're like, I don't even know why I do this. I've written 20 screenplays. I can't get anyone to read them, you know, and they're all doing contests like the Blacklist and, you know, all these different contests. It's, you know, I don't think there is an answer when it comes to screenplays. I think it has to be the right time. It has to fit what people are looking for. I do believe timing is everything.
That is a good point.
I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
You know, if they're looking for comedies, you know, don't push, you know, a murder mystery. You've got to really, really be clear of what people are looking for. I have a script that I wrote with another writer, a sci-fi pilot, and, you know, that's sitting at Warner Brothers right now. And I'm hoping to hear after Thanksgiving what's going to happen with it. And if it doesn't go there, then we're going to send it to someone else. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, you just don't know what they're looking for. So I say, write what you love, you know, and you know. I mean, any writer will tell you to write what you know.
Yeah.
And if it's supposed to line up, it'll line up.
Agreed. I was just, have you ever heard of Bill Evans, the jazz pianist from a long time ago?
Yes, I have.
Somebody sent me a 5-minute video of him being interviewed a long time ago, and it was just fascinating.
Oh, right. What a
really interesting guy. But basically what he said was, you know, he was just really talked about intuition. This was like 50 years ago. And he said, my only job is to take care of my music and then, you know, trust that someone will come along sometime and say, we want your music or we want this. You know, you can apply it to anything.
It's funny how you said music, because this was really interesting. Before my father passed, he was 60 when I was born, and he actually lived to 92, and he was an entertainer all the way to the end.
Wow.
But he said to me once, this is what I love about music so much and making films and all these things that we create and we put into the universe, as he said, you know what's so cool? He used to call me G or G Joe. Hey, you know what's so cool, G or G Joe, is, you know, the best thing about writing all this music that I wrote is that it's going to live on forever, even when I'm gone. Mm. And I thought about that like a month or so ago when John Legend wanted one of my dad's songs for a civil rights documentary. Mm-hmm. And I actually did the deal. And I thought about that whole time. Like, I'm like, wow. So one of my dad's hits is going to be in John Legend's documentary about civil rights. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah.
And, you know, he was an amazing writer. He actually wrote, I have a whole box of like screenplays he wrote before he passed. I mean, they were all written in the 70s. And I've often thought of once I get, you know, my studio bigger and it's going to keep growing because it is. And once I get someone there that can read it, I might actually, you know, get them rewritten to produce a few of them.
That would be really, what a really cool project, huh? You know, co-written, yeah. You know, by father and daughter.
Yeah. So, I mean, but they're all in the 70s. So it's just so funny. Some of the stuff that he writes in the movies, although that might even be funny. Just put them all in the 70s. And
like 70s talk, 70s slang. You mean,
yeah. Or just yeah. Like... It's just funny. Just things that would not be okay to say now, you know, that's the other funny thing, you know, it's just, You know, when things were a little bit more, you know,
loose,
being edited 150, you know, days a week. Yeah.
So, yeah. People weren't. Yeah. Yes. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Not as much.
Well, I mean, it's, everybody walks on eggshells now because you don't want to say the wrong thing.
Oh my God, you get canceled.
Yeah. You get canceled. So it's like, when I read his scripts, I'm like, wow, what freedom you had,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, and it doesn't have to be about a particular thing. It's just that you can just see, you know, my daughter has often said when we've watched movies in the masterclass, because she's an actress also, she's like, wow, I can't believe they can do that. They can say that, you know, whenever I've done old movies.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, You know, I was going to ask you about Belle. What advice do you share with her? You know, since she's very talented and you guys look a lot alike and she's just kind of following mom.
Well, to be honest with you, anyone in my close circle will tell you that I didn't want my kids to be in this industry. Mm. So I did not push my daughter to be an actress. That was the last thing I wanted her to do. Mostly because I had seen what had happened to a lot of my friends back in the day. And also I lived it and did the shuffle in Hollywood and LA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the business was not very kind to women. I mean, I know things have gotten better now, but it was pretty scary in those days. So
yeah,
being the protective mom I am, and I have been a mom 150%, I always put my children first before anything. I wanted to make sure that they would have a, you know, as much of a nice kind of normal life that they could have without being influenced by outside forces or negativity or anything like that. So I always just tell her, when she came to me at 13, she said, she did a school play. This is what happened. She went and did a school play and she liked it. And she said, she comes to me, she goes, she was 13. She goes, are you going to be mad at me if I want to be an actress? And I go, no, I'm going to support you no matter what. And she goes, okay, because I want to do it. And I'm like, okay. You know, but I was like, oh, I tried everything not to do it. I think one of my friends said genetics, you know. And so, yeah, so she is thriving, but she's also an amazing animator. And, you know, she did get into Berkeley. She's very smart and she's beautiful and kind and loving. Both of my kids are really, really kind and loving people. That's how I feel successful, because I have two adults I'm putting out in the world that are going to be good to people. So
that
to me is like gold,
You
know, because I know that they're going to affect someone else's life if they're like me, or they're giving, or they're helping. And, but Belle did this last movie. She had 95 pages of dialogue. She's the lead in that.
Crush It? Or a different movie?
No, she was in Crush It. She's the lead. She plays the lead, the young lead. The director actually casted her. First, I thought the director wrote it for her because it reminded me of Belle. Like the character, when I read the script, I'm like, this is Belle. Like, I thought, well, maybe he wrote it to put Belle in it. Turns out he wrote it years before and he asked to cast her. And I said, sure, you know, it's a comedy, a light comedy. Mm-hmm. And she was stressing. It was a lot.
That's a lot of dialogue.
Oh yeah. And she's in almost in every scene. And you got to understand, she was 18 when she took this on. She just turned 19. It was a lot. And I was very proud of her, you know, for taking that on. But there's also part of her that's very creative in art. And so we'll just have to see where she ends up. I just say, do what you love, you know, and mm-hmm. you know, my father was like that with me. He said, do whatever you want. You always have a roof over your head. So
that's
how I am.
Hmm. You know. Well, we're starting to get a little bit toward the end here. What I always like to ask everybody, you know, maybe an obstacle or obstacles that you overcame, you know, along the way where you had to kind of, you know, dig a little deep to get yourself through.
Well, I think the biggest obstacle that I ever had was my mother's death when I was 8. Mm-hmm. There was a producer friend of mine who was producing Dr. Laura's radio show at the time.
Okay. Yeah.
And she used to also produce the Oprah Winfrey show, and she had given me a book on how it affects children when you're parent dies, like what age you're at when your parent dies. I can't remember the name of it, but it was written by someone from Duke University. And it clearly said that at my age, when you lose a parent, you become resilient. You know, I was 8 and I was not going to let that stop me. You know, I remember trying to keep a brave face when I was younger and just kind of, you know, when you lose a mother, that's kind of difficult. Because
no matter what age you're at, no matter what age.
Well, yeah, but 8 was very difficult. My father was a lot older than her as well.
Yes.
So, yeah. So it was very difficult. You know, also, you know, she did take her life. So that was very heavy. Mm-hmm. I had to like figure out a way to, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm probably one of the most positive people you're ever going to meet.
Yeah.
And I had to figure out a way to turn it around in my head because it was just so difficult to understand. You're sitting there going, well, was it me or, you know, what happened? And you never really quite know because, you know, after reading about it and everything. And I do cover that in my Voices documentary as well. There's a poet in there also that talks about it. And I kind of do a poem that I wrote about my mother. But it's a very heavy subject, especially for a young kid to kind of figure out. And, you know, I don't know what made me do it, but I just turned it around and I was resilient and I still am. Mm. I was fortunate to have a father who was amazing. And then my mother's mother came in to help raise my younger sister and I. Mm. And they were just there for us, you know, in such a big way. I really, really am grateful for that. I don't think I would have been who I am without that.
Yeah.
My dad being, he used to always say, I'm in your corner, G, don't worry. I'm always here in your corner. And my grandmother was always, you know, helping me with everything, with my writing. You know, I always wanted to be a writer. I was writing poetry when I was a kid. Mm. I just never took it really seriously. You know, I have written books. I have been published. I have poetry books published. I have also, you know, and my acting book, you know, that's selling.
We're going to talk about that in a second.
Yeah, yeah. The acting book is selling, you know, really well on Amazon. I've always been a writer. I just never kind of said, oh, I'm a writer. I've always been creating since I was a kid, writing poetry. I used to leave poems for my father when I left, you know, funny poems and love you, see you later, you know. I always was writing greeting card poems, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of saying, well, I would do voice messages for friends' phones and stuff and kind of funny, you know, rhyming stuff and what have you.
Yeah. But I think that's what really, you know, made me who I am. I mean, I often think of what my life would have been like without that, you know, huge life-changing event. I don't know. I don't think I would have been the same person because I'm such a strong person and I've worked so hard to be where I am today.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've often thought of, you know, doing a movie like that, like what my life would have been like if it went another way. And I might do that one day. That was the one that I had written on that weekend that I lost on a computer, but I remember most of it, but, you know, it's something that just never leaves you. It's interesting because I can see a child. This is how intuitive I am. I can actually see a child. I can see how they're acting and I can tell they lost a parent.
Oh, wow.
This has happened quite a few times. I can just pick up the signals because I know what it's like. And I know what you do as a child when that happens, because you don't want, when that happens and you're around other kids with other parents, the last thing you want is to be pitied. That's the last thing you want. Mm. You don't want people to feel sorry for you, right? So right. I had to grow up really fast, you know, because, you know, I had to take care of my younger sister. And I kind of lost my, I often read about Michael Jackson when he would say, oh, I lost my childhood because of performing. Yeah. Well, I grew up really quickly after that happened. You know, I was no longer a kid. I mean, by the time I was 10, I was very mature. Mm. So, you know, and then, and you know, it's, yeah, it's interesting though. It's given me, in a way, it's like I tell everybody else, in this will, you know, talk about the acting thing. When actors come into my class and, or say we're doing a private lesson and something gets deep and they tell me something or some trauma or something that's happened in their life, I always say to them, you know what, let's work with this, because this is your superpower. Mm-hmm. You know, all this pain that you had, let's use this in the work, because it's going to make your performance amazing, and let's turn it around to a positive.
Yeah.
You know, which I often do.
Well, in a lot of ways, it's cathartic, and it enables people to heal a little bit too, right? I mean,
if they're utilizing it
through acting.
Well, I just trademarked my Nemo. It's called the Nemo method. I just trademarked it because it's an accelerated method of method acting and psychology. So it's an accelerated method where I can take a beginner and teach them within 4 hours how to act.
Oh, my. Is that in the book or is that something separate?
No, I just trademarked that because I had someone who wanted to license my technique. So mm-hmm. I don't know about like how I'm going to train someone. That's all kind of new to me, but yeah, I mean, eventually I'll have some franchises with it, but right now I just wanted to protect it because I've seen what's happened. Like I had one kid come in his 20s, amazing looking kid. He's a stunt guy in his 20s. He was supposed to go on a movie with Harry Styles. They were going to shoot something in London. He came to me in a panic. He's like, please, I want to get this, you know, I want to get some lines in this. And I worked with him for 4 hours, and I do the beginning video to the fourth video, and you won't even recognize him. Like in an audition, wow. He will look like he knows what he's doing. And he did get the gig after 4 hours. So,
oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So here I am. I heal people, but I do value, I do know how to set boundaries, and I also nurture myself on a daily basis. And I'm very, very aware when you help other people that you do need to help yourself. So I am very aware of when I need downtime and I need to do Gina time. And I do take that time.
Thank you for mentioning that. Cause I totally hear what you're saying in part. I do a lot to take care of myself too. And I'm very, very aware of that. But in the past, it's as far as like setting boundaries and, you know, there's a little bit of people pleaser in me and it would be tiring, and especially with what I do, and I would get reached out to a lot and I didn't really know how to handle that. And I would get energy in from something and then I would put it right back out. And so I was never really able to build up a reservoir for myself.
And I got really good at it years ago because I saw that people just keep taking advantage. So I just learned, you know, sometimes it's been bad where I just shut people that are causing, you know, I call them crazy makers. I call them crazy makers and I just shut them down. I just block them. I don't even allow it. I'll allow it for a little bit. And if it keeps going, then I'm just, that's it. Yeah. I'm not going to take it on. So I'm really good with that now.
I'm getting there myself, and it's freeing. It's liberating.
It doesn't happen that often, but once in a while, you know, because don't forget I have a school with lots of students. So sometimes I'll get people coming in that are just a little bit kind of, if I get someone who's a bit kooky or something, or, you know, starts messing with other students, or, you know, you just never know sometimes. And I've been pretty lucky, but once in a while you'll get someone that's causing a problem or something. And I just, you know, I don't invite them back. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't tell them to leave, but I make it very uncomfortable.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, for the for
well,
the
it's just called a it's just a respect line. You know, yeah, you have to if you know if you want to be respected, you have to show them that you respect yourself. That's what I tell everybody, even my actors. And you know, I have some brilliant actors that are doing really well. I mean, one of my boys was just on Babylon with Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie, and that's a $300 million movie. And you know, they're getting, I keep telling them, you guys are getting closer. You're getting closer to bigger things. But meanwhile, we all have a blast making movies, and I put a lot of my actors in all of my productions. So, you know, I mean, how many people can say that, you know, a lot of people are waiting for a gig? You know,
no, I mean, you're one, so proactive, and it's just so much of an experience and education.
This one director asked me for people, and he's going through 10,000 submissions for his movie that's shooting in LA in January. And he asked me for some of my best actors. So I sent them, you know, I mean, that's the competition for you. I had a girl from New York come in who has been in a lot of big shows. She's dating a famous rapper. They come into my studio. She needs an audition for a new J.J. Abrams show, who I grew up with, went to high school with. And, you know, and I'm working with her, and, you know, and she tells me she pays a coach in New York $400 an hour for all of her auditions. And so I tell all my boys, I go, hey, and girls too, I'm just making a joke, but I like to sound like a mobster, but you know, my boys, but I, you know, I tell my boys, I just say, look at the competition. You guys need to work harder. If this is what's out there, people are paying $400 for a coach. Look at the competition, you know? So, you know, I always like, I make it a joke. I'm always like the female mobster, you know?
No, it's awesome. Yeah. The
one of my younger students calls me OG. I'm an original gangster.
An original Gina too.
That's what I say too. And you know, Gina, the name Gina's in original.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I'm G Brian Benson. So everybody asks me, what's the G stand for? Oh, it depends on the day of the week. But you know, you got to play with it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So your book, Quick Start to Acting in Hollywood, Your Intro to TV and Film, that's on Amazon?
Yes, it's on Amazon. And I actually wrote it for, you know, originally for young people who have short attention spans. Because every time you talk about books to younger people these days, they don't have patience to read a long book. Sure. So I decided to make it like a little handbook, and it's like a quick read, I think in less than 30 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, they can carry it with them in case they have to spot check something or, you know, they're not familiar with something. And so, yeah, I did it just for that reason, because I've had so many young people come into my studio and they don't want to read any longer books. So
that's a great idea.
Yeah. And it seems to do really well. I mean, I can tell it's selling because, you know, I get sent royalties from it. So it's doing well. I just can't, you know, the funny part is I can't get the young people to do reviews because they don't take the time to do that stuff. Right. So it's like the short attention span. Okay. Can you please review it? Okay. And then you don't hear anything, you know, so I'm just like, whatever, if it sells, it sells. But you know, I give it to new students too, when they come into the studio, so I can give them something to reference.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's paid. And I have a couple students in there that tell stories that encourage new people to keep going. And I did a little tidbit about Johnny Depp at the end, because, you know, from 21 Jump Street, I get plenty of young people asking for Johnny Depp stories. So, boy, the amount of time that that's happened, you know, but it's, I love it because, you know, we were in our 20s and it was fun, and I tell them funny stories, like silly things, you know.
No, that's not, hey, we all want to know that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, we all want to know the back scenes and the, you know, all the gossip.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. He was a sweetheart. I liked him a lot as a person, and his mother was a sweetheart, and, you know, he was a really good guy. He's just very, what people don't understand about him is a very shy person. He was very introverted, and he's more of like a trained extrovert, I'd say. But he was very shy before his career took off, and, you know, we had lots of fun. I mean, great memories, and I've run into him once in a while and said hi, but it hasn't been for a while now. So
yeah. He's been going through some things lately.
I feel bad for him because I know that it's tough to be where he's at with all the press and everything. And when you see relationships go bad, you can't say it's one person or the other. You know, things get volatile. It just depends on the relationship. So You know, you can't really, unless you're in the room with these people, who the heck knows, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I feel sorry for his career because he's done so much, but he went back to music, which is first love anyway. So I'm sure he's happy doing that too. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's why he went out to LA in the first place, right? Was for the music.
Yeah. He just wanted to do music, but when he got the huge agents during the 21 Jump Street time, they squashed his music career because they put all of his stuff away because they didn't want to pitch him as a musician actor.
Yeah.
Because they thought he would lose, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, lose, they wouldn't get as much traction on that. So they took away the music and then he just went full throttle with acting.
Yeah, he could have been another Ricky Nelson.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
I went to school with Ricky Nelson.
Did you really?
Yeah, the two twins. The twins.
Yeah.
I think it was okay. Gunner and
the blondes. Yeah. Huh? The blondes.
Yeah, I think one was Gunner. They used to be at my house. I can't remember. Gunner, I think, was one. Okay. It's so long ago. But yeah, that was the 80s. So anyway.
That's awesome. So people can find you at your website's GinaNemo.com.
Yes.
And I think your social media handles are obviously Gina Nemo or official Gina Nemo. Wow.
Instagram, Twitter. I mostly just announce when I enter a festival or something wins. Mm-hmm. I usually use Twitter for that with the movies. Instagram, you know, I put everything on there just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because everybody says there's a method to Instagram. I'm like, I don't care. Just putting it out there, having fun. There's a method. Okay. Go and hire someone to do yours. But
I know it's starting to get a little tiring if you try to do too much of that stuff.
That's why I don't use it that way. I just use it if somebody wants to look me up and they want to find out more about me, then they can do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the only, you know, reason why I do it.
No, and you're very, very consistent. You're posting a lot.
Well, and you know, I do stay consistent because I tell my actors I want them to stay consistent also because, you know, a lot of casting is done on social media now.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm usually on it. And if, you know, you can't tell people to do it if you're not doing it.
Exactly. Well, you're a very good role model in a lot of different ways.
Yes. So, you know, I'm very proud of some of them. They're starting to really take off now and they're excited about the feature Dust Lickers with the plural now.
Well, and they're all good guys too. They're all nice guys.
Yeah. They're all great. And you know, I'm waiting for one of them to get, you know, this is how anybody feels. I want one of them to get something that's a little bit more high profile so that I could just bring everybody else up. So that's what I'm hoping for. I'm just thinking positive and, you know, they're all definitely, their skill level is off the hook. I'm not worried about that. It's just the right time. Opportunity meets preparation.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And when the opportunity comes, they're ready.
Yeah, they're ready. I have no doubt about that. They're ready for sure. It's more just the right opportunity at this point. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. You're welcome. It's fun just chatting.
Absolutely.
We should just have coffee next time on Zoom. No, I'm kidding.
Anytime. I mean, I know you're busy and I'll be out your way here in about a little less than 2 months, early January.
Okay. Yeah. And, I'm doing that. I'm just doing that one rom-com we're shooting before Christmas. And then I'm going to probably in January, I'm going to be gearing up. I'm going to be interviewing a lot of the applications for the film school because I've gotten lots in. So, and then. Yeah. And then we'll be gearing up for, you know, Dust Lickers with an S because the short film didn't have an S. That's why we want to make it different. And so I think next year is going to be amazing and it's my lucky number 22. So I'm happy.
Awesome. All right. Well, I look forward to seeing what's next. And I mean, of all the different avenues that you're diving into it. It's inspiring and you're doing good stuff, you know,
reasons. You know, I put it out there because I love doing what I'm doing and I hope it does inspire people. I've often gotten messages from people saying, thank you. I was feeling really down, but you turned it around.
Yes. And just being a good person. I mean, I'm lucky that for the most part, I feel like I'm good. I do things for the right reason. You know what I mean? I treat people with respect and that makes a difference. And that draws people to you as well.
I always treat everyone with kindness and, you know, respect until they don't deserve it. You know, I kind of look at people that way. I always give them a welcome. And as long as, you know, they're respectful and kind, and they don't, they stay humble. I mean, that's one of my things, one of the boys is talking to Brad Pitt on set and I'm like, get your butt back in the studio and stay humble, stay humble. And I worked with Brad Pitt on 21 Jump Street years ago when he was just a day player. So I said, next time you see him, tell him hello from Gina and tell him he's a poser. And then, he was laughing. So yeah, I mean, it's good to see them grow and progress. And I do know I have a couple superstars there. So I just, just going to keep pushing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Well,
all right.
Until next time. Thank you, my friend.
Until next time. All right. Well, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson, his latest best-selling book, Habits for Success, and this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. And we love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.